Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sports Talk Chicago's 17th podcast. My name's John Zagluel, owner and operator of the site. We're going to have a lot to get to today, including our special guests, but first, here's a few quick announcements. Make sure to follow Sports Talk Chicago on Twitter at ChiTalkSports. Also, hit me up personally on LinkedIn, Google+, and Instagram, all at John Zags. And finally, if you're looking for a place in the area to purchase a great gift, maybe for a housewarming party or a birthday gift, then stop by Mucci World, a peculiar place, which is a gift shop and more. It's located at the Tinley Park Downs Shopping Center. The address is 7913 171st Street in Tinley Park. You can call them at 773-796-8224. That's 773-796-8224. Now, today's special guest will be featured at the end of the show, this time a little bit different, but due to certain scheduling restraints, we're going to have to push him back towards the end. So I'll start off first by doing some analysis, and who better to start off with than the Chicago Cubs? They are on fire right now. They are currently 46-20, and they lead the NL Central Division by a whopping 11.5 games. So they are certainly dominating baseball right now. What's the reason behind it? Well, let's take a look. First of all, you have to credit the starting rotation. Right now, the highest qualifying ERA for all five of the starters is Kyle Hendricks, and his ERA is just a hair over 3.0. It's quite amazing to see this Cubs rotation in action, and it reminds me of the fact that I do not remember personally a time when the Cubs had this solid of a five-man rotation, everybody with ERAs under the 3.10 mark. And speaking of ERA, the Cubs actually lead all teams in ERA total. The Cubs, as a team, have a 2.63 ERA. In second place on that list is a 3.16 mark from the New York Mets. So the Cubs, again, proving that pitching and defense ultimately win games and end up winning championships for you in the near future. Hopefully that will be a fact. But again, right now it's quite historical seeing all of these starters actually in contention for an NL ERA crown. And we all thought it was just going to be another Jake Arrieta show this year, and believe you me, it is. I mean, 11-1, ERA under 2 is amazing. Actually, the second best ERA in baseball right now. But at this point, I think anyone could really contend for that ERA title. John Lester's fourth in baseball in ERA, and Jason Hamill's ninth, and John Lackey, I believe, is 13th. So that just goes to show you that everybody's in contention right now. All the pitchers are really doing well. And if it wasn't for them, I don't know how far the Cubs would be, because, again, you don't know how much an offense can really carry you. And actually, speaking about the Cubs' offense here, they're not doing that bad, but some could say that they could do better. Right now, the team's leader in batting average is Ben Zobrist, hitting at a solid .315 clip. Behind him, Dexter Fowler at .290, and then Chris Bryant at .274. Now, I'm not saying the Cubs' offense is bad, quite the contrary, but take a look, if you get a chance, at maybe a box score of a regular Cubs game, and take a look closely, especially, at the batting averages of each player as you go down the list. Personally, I find it quite shocking that when you take a look, the only regular hitter hitting over .300 is Ben Zobrist. Everyone else, I estimate, is hitting more in the area of .260, maybe even a little less. So it's kind of odd to say that the Cubs are the best team in baseball, but it's really timely hitting that has allowed them to win so many games, not regular hitting. And although it's not cause for concern yet, it's just a statistical anomaly that I noticed and something to maybe look into as the season goes on. But the fact that some of these offensive numbers are a little bit low, it just goes to show you how well the Cubs' pitching has done, as it has really kept them afloat and contributed to their success so far this year. Now let's take a quick trip to the south side as we talk about the Chicago White Sox, currently 33-35, 4.5 games out of the AL Central lead, so they're still hanging around, but what a collapse it's been for them so far this year. Now, what the Sox are going through is really the complete opposite of the Cubs. They just don't have the pitching right now. They have yet to have a solid five-man rotation, let alone a four-man rotation. And after yesterday's start by James Shields, it just gets Sox fans more and more worried about their team's playoff chances. Let's talk about James Shields for a moment. So he left San Diego, a 2-7 record, 4.28 ERA, not horrible, but he came off a couple of bad starts. Well, right now with the Sox, in three starts, he's 0-2 with an ERA of 21.81. He has given up 21 earned runs in 8 2/3 innings pitched. Just think about that stat for a second. On the year now, he's 2-9. Meanwhile, other players like John Danks, Matt Latos, and Miguel Gonzalez have all deeply underperformed in that fourth and fifth starter role, and all have either been released or relegated to the minor leagues. So right now for the White Sox, they really need a shutdown pitcher, a good 2 or 3 starter to back up Chris Sale and Jose Quintana, who have had rather great seasons, and also Carlos Rodon not doing that bad in his second season in the big leagues. Now, I will say another real gaping hole for the Sox is their offense. Now, although Todd Frazier is second in the AL with 19 home runs, he's currently hitting under 200. And judging by last season and other past historical stats on Todd Frazier, that average could drop to as low as 150 by the end of the year due to the fact that he really slows down in the second half compared to the first. So Frazier right now in trouble. Another guy who really needs to wake up his bat is Jose Abreu. Hitting .266 with 10 home runs, that's not horrible, but way, way off his career splits. I mean, this was a guy who hit over .300 and parked 36 long balls in his rookie year, and even last year. Hit .290, hit 30 home runs. I think if Jose Abreu could wake up his bat and realize what's going on with him, it'd really help out this struggling White Sox team. Another guy who's really underperforming is Brett Lowry, who was supposed to be the next big thing at second base, but right now his OPS is currently under 700, and he's hitting .231. And also, congratulations are in order to Tim Anderson, who recently got called up. He's hitting .265 right now with a stolen base. Not doing amazing, but still, he just had a 3-hit game against Detroit on June 15th. So again, congratulations to Tim Anderson. Hopefully, we can be seeing him for many years to come. On the rumor side of things, the White Sox are reportedly interested in acquiring Jose Reyes via free agency. And if Reyes could return to his form that he had with the Mets, which included a .292 batting average, that would be a big solution to the White Sox shortstop problems that started with Jimmy Rollins. So again, problems with the Sox include the starting pitching for sure. Hopefully James Shields could figure out his act. But as far as the hitting goes, this team was supposed to be a better hitting ball club, especially with the additions of Todd Frazier and Brett Lowry. I mean, this team on paper was supposed to be a good offensive team, but right now, these players are underperforming, and they need to find a way to get the job done on the South Side. Before we move on, I'd like to say that if you stick around towards the end of the podcast and listen to my special guest, he will also offer some more insight on the Cubs and Sox. Now on to the Chicago Bulls, and if you just recently looked at the website, you might have seen my article regarding the Bulls and how they're about to sell out for the 2016-17 season. As I mentioned in the article, and I'll mention to you again, Jimmy Butler is currently on the trade block, and right now, according to rumors circulating, he is supposedly going to go to the Minnesota Timberwolves for Andrew Wiggins and the number 5 overall pick. And on the other side of things, for Derrick Rose, he is supposedly on the trade block, and the New York Knicks are very interested in him, as their current starting point guard is Jose Calderon, who failed to average above 9 points a game last season. In the article, I actually call out management. Quote, "Management wants to blame the players on the end of the previous era. But in actuality, the firing of Coach Thibodeau for no specific reason set the team up for failure. Instead of declaring themselves the scapegoat or firing Hoiberg, the front office is determined to close the door on a successful era in Bulls history. Now, when I refer to eras, I'm referring to points in time where the Bulls were either good or bad. Like, for example, after Michael Jordan left, for the next 7 or 8 years, the Bulls were horrible, to be quite frank. They made horrible draft picks, and they didn't do anything to get themselves back into the playoffs. Once they drafted Derrick Rose in that infamous 2008 draft, everything started to turn around for them. From 2008 until the 2014-15 season, each year the Bulls made the playoffs, and as I mentioned, they didn't win a championship, which is okay. But they had memorable playoff series, and one that I remember the most is the fact that the Bulls actually made it to the conference finals before they lost to LeBron James when he was on the Heat. So last year, the Bulls didn't make the playoffs for the first time since the year before Derrick Rose was drafted. In this case, now management wants to basically declare that a new era is underway. They want to rebuild right now and basically close the door on the era that once was. Now, as I mentioned in my article, I completely disagree with this idea. The whole reason why the team collapsed last year, and I will stick to this reason till the end, is the decision to hire Fred Hoiberg and fire Tom Thibodeau. It's that simple. This year the Bulls went 42-40, which is okay because they could have gone 10 times worse, because Hoiberg is not an NBA coach, he is a college coach. Tom Thibodeau knew how to get everything out of his players. He got the best of each one of his players. I mean, for example, Nate Robinson actually had probably the best 2 or 3 years of his career when he was with the Chicago Bulls, because that's how good of a coach Tom Thibodeau was. The Bulls decided to fire him because they believed that he consistently overworked his players. Sure, the Bulls won 60 games a couple of years in a row, and in the strike-shortened season, they even won 50 games. But once they made it to the playoffs, they were never able to get past a certain point. They never made it to the NBA Finals. And also, the fact that management just didn't like Tom Thibodeau. They had their eyes set on Fred Hoiberg from maybe 2 or 3 years ago, because Thibodeau would consistently clash with management. Fast forward to today, now Thibodeau is not only the head coach of the Minnesota Timberwolves, but he's the president of basketball operations. So go figure, now Thibodeau doesn't have to deal with anybody but himself. That's the position that he needs to be in, and I'll tell you right now, the Minnesota Timberwolves are going to be a very good team next year, especially with reigning Rookie of the Year Karl-Anthony Towns still at the helm. Now imagine if they still got Jimmy Butler from the Bulls. I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the Timberwolves could really seriously contend for an NBA title next year. So basically, in a nutshell, you can't be blaming anybody but management themselves for the rebuilding process and for the fact that the Bulls are selling out now before the 2016-17 season. They are giving up on a group of players, but really they should be giving up on the head coach. And that's the thing that really doesn't make any sense to me personally. And with that, let's move on now to the Chicago Bears. Now here's some breaking news from minicamp. Marquise Wilson is now out indefinitely after re-fracturing his left foot on Tuesday. And Coach John Fox made things worse by saying that Wilson could open the season on the physically unable to perform list, which would make Wilson ineligible to play during the first 6 weeks of the regular season. So a tough blow right out of minicamp for the Bears, as their number three, or projected number three wide receiver, could be out for the first 6 weeks of the year. Not a good start to minicamp. Now, on a promising note, Leonard Floyd is pleased with the strides that he's made so far in minicamp. Right now, he has actually been taken under the wing of linebacker Willie Young. Here's what Floyd had to say about Young. Quote, "I just love the overall player. I just love his energy. He brings a lot of energy every day, and he's just a work-hard player." Coach John Fox continues to praise Floyd as well, and here's a quote from him. "He's got tremendous athleticism. We talked about that even in the draft process. He's very smart, has played a lot of different positions, understands the game, and he has the skill set to do all parts of his job. both in coverage and as far as the pass rush goes. And on a final note, Leonard Floyd recently talked to reporters again about that weight issue that I mentioned in my last podcast, and Floyd has said that he has put on quite a few pounds since joining the Bears, but is not worried about that new bulkiness affecting his speed. And finally, I'd like to move on to the Chicago Blackhawks, and first of all, I'd like to congratulate the Pittsburgh Penguins on defeating the San Jose Sharks in the Stanley Cup Finals. It was quite a liberating feeling to see the San Jose Sharks lose on such a big stage like that. So again, thank you to the Pittsburgh Penguins. Here's some news that has surfaced about the Blackhawks. First of all, the Hurricanes have acquired Teuvo Teravainen and Brian Bickle from the Hawks in a recent trade. In return, the Hawks received a second round pick in this month's draft, which is the 50th overall, and a third round pick for next year's draft, which actually saves some salary cap space. And the whole idea behind all these moves is to try and re-sign Andrew Shaw, as Stan Bowman said that the Bickle trade along with Teravainen was a step in the right direction. And also, another little tidbit of news, the Blackhawks agreed to a one-year term with Richard Panik. Panik last year had 6 goals in 30 games after the team acquired him from the Toronto Maple Leafs. And on another transaction note, the Hawks and 19-year-old defenseman Gustav Forsling have agreed to a 3-year contract. Forsling had 6 goals and 15 assists in 48 games last year in the Swedish Hockey League. And on a final note, congratulations to Patrick Kane, who recently received the Art Ross Trophy, which goes to the player who leads the league in points at the end of the year. Kane had 106 points this year, finishing first in the league. This is his first Art Ross Trophy. Congratulations, Patrick Kane. Now on to our special guest. He has been a part of 13 Major League Baseball organizations as recent as the Toronto Blue Jays. He used to play for the Chicago Cubs and the Chicago White Sox. He has also posted back-to-back 30 save seasons with the Seattle Mariners. Please welcome David Aardsma to the show. So hello everybody, we're back here. David Aardsma on the show with us. David, how you doing today? And thank you for being on the show.
Doing great. Thank you for having me on.
So first of all, I'd like to reflect on your career, specifically as a member of the Cubs and the White Sox. How did you feel about being a member of that Cubs team in 06, and they did underperform a little, and in 2007 with the Sox that recorded actually its first losing season since 1999, how was that for you?
Well, unfortunately, they weren't the best years for the teams, but, you know, it was a lot of fun. I grew up a big Cubs fan, always wanted to be a Cub, so it was kind of a dream come true, actually getting up to, Wrigley and being on the Cubs, and it was one of those magical things for me. It's, even though the team, we didn't have all that much success, I had so much fun just being a Cub and kind of fulfilling my dreams, and, man, it was so special. And then, you know, it's unfortunately, you know, because I thought we had a good team. I thought we had a pretty solid squad, and especially in 07 with the White Sox, I thought we had a really good team. And, from day one of spring training, you'd tell with the White Sox, we just didn't have that it factor, that just like that walk in and, you know, it was the weirdest thing from spring training on. We struggled in almost every facet, and we should have had a lot better season than we did. But it was tough. Again, both teams were great guys. I really liked that those 16 with the Cubs, but it was frustrating losing, especially once you get to fulfill your dream and struggle.
Now, unfortunately for you, you've had some bad luck. You've been on some good teams that really just haven't performed. How do you feel about the fact that you have never been able to appear in a playoff game?
Well, you know, it's a little frustrating because I've been on a couple really, really good teams. In 2008, being with the Red Sox going to the ALCS, I thought that team, easily I thought we could have won the World Series without a problem. That was the year Manny decided to become Manny and lead the team and go to the Dodgers and that kind of whole fiasco. I thought if Manny was any sort of resemblance of what he should have been doing, we would have easily won the World Series. We played Philly that season because it ended up being Philly that won it. We played Philly that season and we swept them in Philly. So I thought there was no question we could have easily won the World Series. Unfortunately, though, I had injuries right at the end of the year. I tore my groin. I actually went on the DL twice for it. So it's really, really frustrating. Not be able to be, you know, in uniform for the playoffs, and I just wasn't healthy. It, you know, I think I could have really helped and really contributed and hopefully gotten to the World Series. And then that, in 2012 with the Yankees, you know, we had a good team, but again, I was coming back from Tommy John, and I came back really late this season in September. It just wasn't, I just didn't have enough innings under my belt to be able to contribute and make that playoff roster.
Now, let's go back to your glory days for a minute, because in your days with Seattle, you clearly found a team in which you could settle in with. In only 2 years with the Mariners, you racked up an astonishing 69 saves, along with a solid 2.90 ERA. So how did it feel to really be a shutdown closer, and how were you able to produce continual success?
Well, that 08 season with the Red Sox, I could definitely tell I was starting to come into my own. I was starting to really connect, and I was starting to have a lot of success, and like I said, unfortunately, I had those growing problems, and you know, so I knew things were happening. I knew all I needed to do was get the next year to stay healthy. I get traded to Seattle, and at the time, I thought it was, you know, a horrible move for me. I was leaving the Red Sox, who, you know, we just went to the ALCS. I didn't want to leave that team, so I knew we had a really, really good team. But you know, getting to Seattle was one of the best moves ever for my career. And I could tell, you know, it was just the team was different, the feeling was different, getting to have a team that really trusted me and gave me an opportunity to really kind of step up. And man, they let me do it, and it was awesome. I felt great those two seasons. The ball was coming out of my hand different. And man, it was a lot of fun getting out there and saving some games in Major League Baseball.
Now, as a player, you have been a part of 13 different organizations, and your stint in Seattle was actually the only occurrence in which you have been a part of the same team for consecutive years. So how difficult has it been for you to switch from team to team on quite a yearly basis, and how has it made you become a better baseball player?
You know, it's one of those things I've always kind of felt comfortable doing, unfortunately. You know, ever since high school, you know, you play on your high school team, and you play on a different summer ball team, and then I go to college, and I play on a different college summer ball team, then I transfer colleges. So for me, that transition and moving around really has always kind of been in my blood and always kind of been there. So unfortunately, when I was quite young, like my second season in baseball, I get traded to the Cubs. That kind of started that whole trading thing, and then later on, obviously, becoming a free agent. So it's kind of become pretty normal to me to be on a different team, a different environment, and adapting. I adapted very well to the environment. And, you know, now being a veteran, I kind of seen a lot of different places and seen how really good organizations do things. And I think it's definitely helped me coming into different places to try to bring that into them and bring how winning teams do it and try to help the organizations that I'm with.
Now, I'd like to get your insight on the Cubs and the Sox this year for a minute, so I'll start with the Cubs. They are absolutely dominating the game at this point. Although all aspects of their game are well off right now, what do you personally think about the strength of their bullpen, and who needs to step up and improve their performance in these coming months?
Well, it's impressive, man. They're a team. They're a really solid team. Who's the left fielder that got hurt? Schwarber?
Yeah.
I was really concerned when he got hurt because he is so good last year for them. I didn't expect the Cubs to come out as hot as they did, especially losing, you know, you want your middle of the order bats. But man, they're a solid team. That bullpen is been, you know, shut down. You know, just overall for me, that the team has just been solid, and I don't think it's necessarily that guys need to step up. It just guys is, you know, just, you know, during the course of a season, 162 games, you're going to run into some, you know, as it was, you're going to go up and down a little bit, And what it is sometimes you need to get, you know, to lose a couple games to remember how to win. You know, because when you're winning and everything's going good, especially when you have a younger team, when everything's going good, you want to be on that high. But, you know, sometimes you need to, you know, to remember what it's like to lose, to be hungry again. And I think they're going to be just fine. I think they got just such a solid team, a solid, you know, front office, that, you know, it's going to be one of those things that Madden's not going to let them, you know, let them lose and let them continue to lose. They're just too good of a team and too well run of a team.
Now, I want to switch sides to the White Sox for a minute. And on the other hand, they have suffered a bit of a collapse at this point. They lost their lead in the AL Central Division, and they're currently playing below 500 baseball. Who do you think is to blame for this collapse, and what are some things that you have noticed, especially in the bullpen, that could make the team better?
Yeah, well, with the White Sox, I was a little surprised by how hot they started the season with all the issues they had in spring training. I was very surprised. I thought that was going to be a whole lot of turmoil, a lot of unneeded stress put on the team. You know, especially, you know, mid to late spring training, you lose such a veteran player, LaRoche, and his presence. That's usually the last thing you ever want to happen, especially in spring training. But they came out so hot, so good, and then it just almost seems like it's just been a complete collapse of, you know, of almost every facet of their game. It's been frustrating to watch because you can tell they're too good of a team for how they're playing and how it's all coming together. And, you know, it's always tough as a bullpen, you know, when the team is struggling so bad to try to go out there and have those really good innings. But what you got to do is you just got to build off of one inning or one guy. And, you know, one guy comes out there and pitches well. The next one just has to go follow him and just try to create a little bit of momentum, a little bit of a snowball effect, and let that, you know, then carry over into the rotation, and hopefully that carries over into the bats because they start feeling confident in that bullpen that they're going to get the job done, and you go from there.
Now, final question here. I know you're a busy man. I want to make it quick, but it's a two-part question. So first of all, recently news has surfaced that you opted out of your minor league contract with the Blue Jays. What was the reasoning behind that, and do you plan on signing with another team soon? And then also, where do you see yourself right now? Are you looking to continue your career at this point, or are you beginning to contemplate retirement?
Well, a lot of good questions there. well, the first part is I had to opt out of my contract with the Blue Jays, so I wasn't pitching well, and then, you know, especially not pitching well in AAA for me is extremely frustrating. I've had, you know, a lot of success, especially at the AAA level, and I wasn't happy with how I was pitching and how my body was moving on the mound. So I felt like I needed to make a change and come back to, my roots a little bit and get better. So I wasn't getting the amount of innings that I felt like I needed to fix my issues, so I came down to where I trained in the off season in Covington, Louisiana, with my pitching coach, Brett Porcio, and so I needed to, you know, kind of really kind of get back to my biomechanics and really understand my body a little bit better and what was happening. And the cool thing was, we came down here, really studied how I'm moving, you know, why I'm not being as consistent as I wanted to be on the mound. And we found some really interesting stuff in my body and we fixed it. That's the cool part. Now the hard part is I want to still play. I feel like I still have a lot left in me and my velocity was still good this season. And I want to, you know, we're down here. We're have my agent working on finding a team and finding a place to pitch. And I think I can go out and still really contribute and help at the major league level. Now, career-wise, you know, it is up to a point where I am later in my career, so I am trying to be smart about it and really look at the future and find out where I want to go. And I think one of the neat things is doing all the work down here, understanding my mechanics, and understanding you know, I have a little bit of an analytics background, is trying to figure out where I could, you know, study and understand more about the mechanics and help things with that. I think there's a big need in Major League Baseball for the biomechanics and the analytics side to actually be able to apply it to the player. And I'm trying to, you know, get as much knowledge about that as possible. And you know, you never know. One day they just into a role like that.
All right. Well, thank you so much, David Arzma. Really appreciate you coming on the show. And, yeah, just thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on.
And once again, a very special thank you to David Arzma for taking time out of his day to appear on the show. Now we're going to begin our closing segment, starting with the odd sports story of the day, and I'll tell you, this one is very odd. Yak racing is a spectator sport held at many traditional festivals of Tibet, northern Pakistan, and Mongolia, and can be one of the most entertaining parts of a Tibetan horse festival. So, actually, in China, in the areas of Mongolia and northern Pakistan, they have yak racing competitions in which each of the competitors mounts his yak. The yaks run towards the opposite end of the race course in a sprint, and then there's a winner. So, quite an odd sport played overseas. Could we ever see that come to America? I'd actually like to see those televised on TV. It'd be pretty funny. Now on to our punchline of the day segment, and it's going to be fitting because, again, as you know from yesterday, the Cleveland Cavaliers are now the world champions of basketball, but yet there are some jokes online that beg to differ. So here's the question. What's the difference between the Cleveland Cavaliers and a dollar bill? Answer, you can still get four quarters out of a dollar bill. Ho ho! And on a related note, I'd like to know how Miami Heat fans are feeling right about now. That is your punchline of the day segment. And finally, my personal favorite, the announcer's call of the day segment. I'm going to have a great clip for you folks at home that will commemorate David Arzma for appearing on the show. So let me set the mood here. Right now, David Arzma is closing for the Seattle Mariners against the Cleveland Indians. It's 1-0, runners on first and second with Shelly Duncan at the plate. Arzma had him 0-2, but it turned into a full count with runners on second and third due to a wild pitch. Let's hear how this one ends.
Got five more, prevent a tie ball game. Count is run to full count. The pitch from Arzma. Suck him out! Game over! Mariners!
And again, just what an effort there by David to consider. I mean, it's a 1-0 game. Full count on the batter, runners on second and third. It can't get any more intense than that, but he found a way to get out of it. Congratulations to him on such a great playing career. Hopefully it's not over. And thank you to him as well, once again, for appearing on today's show. Well, that's it for us here at Sports Talk Chicago. Our 17th podcast has concluded. I really appreciate everybody tuning in. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at ChiTalkSports. Follow me personally on Google+, LinkedIn, and Instagram, all at John Zags. Thank you again to everybody who has continued to listen, and we'll see you very soon.